One of Barack Obama's first acts after being sworn in as president was to issue an executive order which committed his administration to closing the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay within a year. He also put the military commission system for prisoners there on hiatus. Now, 2 years later, Guantanamo remains open, and just this week, the president announced that the tribunals would resume. On today's Backstory segment, we'll take a look at Guantanamo and the people who are still incarcerated there. And joining us now are Carol Rosenberg, a reporter from McClatchy and the Miami Herald, and Emily Berman, counsel in the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
Me too. Thanks a lot for the invitation.
Next January, Guantanamo, as we understand it today, will be 10 years old. Emily, does the current position of the Obama administration make it likely that the camp will be with us for a lot longer?
Unfortunately, I think it does. I think the announcements that we had this week about reviving the military commissions there and what we already knew about the difficulty that the Obama administration is having in relocating the detainees, even the ones that they would like to transfer, I think that this solution to this problem is still a ways off for us.
Well, Carol, the White House has said the president remains committed to closing the prison, but do you have a sense that the president's hands are tied by opposition from Congress and elsewhere? Is his decision to keep the facility open and his recent reversal on tribunals a political choice?
Well, I don't know about the politics, but Congress has definitely made it impossible. The idea was to resettle in other countries and, well, just to resettle some of the men who shouldn't be there, who should be set free and who should get on with their lives, and to re-imprison or put in jails elsewhere the folks that they either wanted to put on trial who had been convicted or who they believed could be convicted. And that was sort of the scheme. And as it evolved through the first couple of years, the Obama administration cast about for countries to take in and resettle some men, and they did that successfully.
Well, so many some countries refused to take the men, didn't they?
Well, some countries expressed real frustration with the Obama administration, this comes out in the WikiLeaks memos. You're coming to us and asking us to take in some of these men you now say should be free or should be given a chance at resettlement, but United States hasn't taken any. And that was Congress. Congress put up obstacles almost from the start for bringing any even cleared of wrongdoing or cleared for release Guantanamo captives to the United States. So not one has come there for resettlement. So as the Obama envoys went around Europe and across the world saying, I have a guy here who shouldn't be at Guantanamo, and will you help him start his life? There was a pushback from Europe saying, we, France, want to take them, but you, the United States, should help some of these guys out too. And they haven't.
And I would just add that the Obama administration didn't do itself any favors in that respect, either with Congress domestically or with nations abroad, in that they continued in the U.S. courts to defend against the habeas petitions that these detainees had filed and alleged that they were dangerous. And it's not sort of surprising at that point that people don't want them to then resettle next door.
So on the one hand, they're saying they're dangerous. On the other hand, they're saying we don't want to keep them in prison, but you take them, not us.
Exactly.
Is there any support in Washington for closing Guantanamo at this point? I mean, is this a political, a partisan thing, as so many things are today, or are there many Democrats who also oppose closing Guantanamo?
I don't think anyone in Congress at this point has seen any political gain in defending the idea of closure. Congress at this point, Democrats and Republicans, sees Guantanamo as the best solution, and nobody's sticking their neck out and trying to help the president on this one.
Now, why do they say it's the best solution? What are their arguments for keeping it open?
Well, to a certain degree, no one knows where else to put these people. They haven't been successful in relocating them, and they're, as we've seen, very vocal opponents of trying them in civilian courts in the continental U.S.
So every state says, not here.
Exactly.
We have all of these European countries are saying not here, and all of the states of the United States saying not here. So they wind up in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
But Emily, don't you also think that part of the problem is that the concern is certain rights might attach to these men were they brought to U.S. soil, that while at Guantanamo people get habeas and they do get some sort of review, some of the biggest proponents of indefinite detention without charge worry that as soon as they got onto U.S. soil, they might have a better argument to make about the fact that they are unlawfully detained.
I think that's true. I think that there are certain constitutional protections that we just don't know yet whether they would apply at Guantanamo or not, and I'm sure that that is a concern of some lawmakers. I also think that one of the issues that made Guantanamo even more contentious was the debate that we had and continue to have over Mirandizing suspected terrorists and whether that then prevents us from acquiring the intelligence that we want from them. And I think there are a lot of lawmakers who take the position that in the military system and at Guantanamo, we're more likely to get actionable intelligence than we are domestically. And I'm just not sure that that theory is actually true.
Aren't there also concerns that some of these people might claim that they were tortured? And so much of what they have admitted to would be thrown out in a civil court, well, a criminal court?
Well, that's certainly true, but at the same time, that's already happened in military commissions. And the rules governing military commissions, which have sort of evolved over time and due to the 2009 amendments to the Military Commissions Act, are currently more protective of detainees' rights than they had been in the past. They're going to exclude a lot of the same evidence that a domestic civilian court would exclude.
Now, the administration has said that it made some changes to the revamped military commission system to make them more like regular American courts.
Yeah, that's what they've said they've done. The biggest change I think that they would point to is in terms of those confessions and interrogations you speak about. Under the Bush administration, the standard was coercion. You couldn't torture a confession out of a captive, but were it coerced, it would probably be admissible at a military trial. Now, the Obama administration is saying that voluntariness is the standard, that a detainee, a prisoner, would have had to volunteer the information without coercion, and that only voluntary confessions would be acceptable at trial. Well, the critics will tell you that you can get someone to volunteer many years later after they were coerced into saying something because they said it so often under, you know, torture or threat that they don't mind saying it again when someone's treating them nicely.
Well, we have so many other phrases to describe what went on. Enhanced interrogation. Is that coercion? Is that torture? Or is that just pressuring people to volunteer?
Well, enhanced interrogation included waterboarding, and there are huge, vast parts of American society that consider waterboarding torture. So there are language, but the individual techniques include techniques that would not be acceptable in an American court today, I believe.
My guests are Carol Rosenberg, who's a reporter from McClatchy and the Miami Herald, and Emily Berman, counsel in the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. We're talking about the current situation at Guantanamo on today's Backstory on the Leonard Lopate Show here on WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Emily, some critics say that the Obama administration has essentially adopted the Bush-era detention and tribunal system. Do you believe that's the case?
Yes and no. I think that, first of all, the Bush administration policies had evolved a significant amount from the time immediately after September 11th and the time Bush left office. There were several intervening decisions by the Supreme Court that required some mitigation of the policies, and there had been political pressure after the revelations at Abu Ghraib and that sort of thing that had changed some of those policies. So
it changed first term to, and second term.
Yeah, so the policies that President Obama inherited when he took office were not the policies of 2003. And he has made some minor, some would say cosmetic, additional changes, including some of those procedural changes we talked about in the commissions.
Now, Carol, you've spent some time covering Guantanamo. Is anything about the facility substantively different in the Obama era?
Well, for one, they've consolidated most of the prisoners into a penitentiary-style building, and they don't have these camps that probably, if people close their eyes and imagine Guantanamo, those don't exist anymore. People are held in what looks like a prison building, and it's a penitentiary, and these are the uncharged prisoners, the uncharged captives. They've got them consolidated. They have created a much more, I guess one could say, liberal regime of medium security confinement, meaning they're in pods. Captives are kept together more like POW camp style confinement. They can eat together in small groups. They can pray together in small groups. They can kick a soccer ball around. This was something that the military had wanted to do for some time. They wanted to get them out of their, the ones that they felt were cooperative, get them out of their individual cells and put them in this sort of barrack-style confinement inside these prisons. And this was done for the military as much as it was done for the men. If you leave them to themselves and you allow them to take care of their basic day-to-day activities, you don't have the guards and messing with the detainees and the detainees messing with the guards. Everybody sort of keeps to their own side of the wall and tries to get along as best as possible. So I would say that accommodations have changed. And I think that that's done, you know, partly for behavioral management, but partly because Guantanamo is an evolutionary experiment. They started off with Camp X-Ray, and everybody's seen it. It's an outdoor open, you know, open-air cage that looked pretty crude. And the Pentagon wants, as it does, because it's a bureaucracy, to do it as efficiently as possible. So they have consolidated. In terms of the legal processes, what the Obama administration unveiled this week was something called review boards. It's got a new name. It's not unlike the annual reviews that the Bush administration gave them. And the detainees who went through these annual review boards where they made a pitch and said, I shouldn't be here, are going to find them more familiar than not. They were suspended for a while, and now they're back.
Now, Emily, in the past we heard about hunger strikes and people being force-fed. I'm assuming that's no longer the case. I mean, they've been brought in from the cold, or when they were out there in Camp X-Ray, I imagine Cuba was nice except when it rained. But still, they've been brought into better conditions today?
I think they have, and Carol knows far more about this with the time that she's spent down there than I have. But I at the same time, the psychological situation that so many of the detainees are in remains incredibly stressful. There are dozens of detainees who have been cleared for release for months or for years by either the Obama administration or by the federal courts, and who nevertheless still sit there not knowing when or if they're ever going to be able to leave. And that's incredibly difficult circumstances to live under on a day-to-day basis.
Carol, how many men are currently I was going to ask you, how many men are currently detained there, and then say what you want to say.
Absolutely. Sorry, there's 172 captives. Four of them have been convicted of war crimes, three in exchange for plea agreements, and that should get them home pretty fast. But I just wanted to interject, there are hunger strikes going on at Guantanamo. There are people who are being force-fed, or as the military says, enterally fed every day through tubes, cans of Ensure. The military says these are statements, protests, that they claim it's not a force feeding, that these men agree to be shackled into a chair and have a nose tethered up and have a tube tethered up their nose and get fed. That it's not a, you know, it's not a struggle every day to get them into that chair and get that tube feeding going.
So there's no coercion involved.
No, this is what they would say. It's voluntary, in fact. But the point being, we don't know how many, because the military under Obama has decided that they're not going to tell us how many. They used to be very scrupulous in giving us an account of how many people were fed by a tube yesterday and how many of the, you know, what percentage and how many individuals. There's one guy there, I believe, who hasn't, you know, eaten normally for years, and he's fed this way. But this is, if you want to look for an Obama change, this is the transparency that Obama promised. In some ways at Guantanamo just has never arrived. We know less about some things than we do about others because the military had decided that they just didn't want to account for this force feeding that's going on down there. But so yes, there's 172 people at Gitmo. People think it's closed, but there's 172 foreign men there still.
And on average, how long have most of them been there?
The first ones arrived in January 2002.
And they're still there?
Oh, for sure.
That's 9 years. Are there any recent arrivals?
They haven't brought anyone in since, I believe, 08. The Bush administration had made that decision. The Bush administration had stopped pretty much bringing anyone in, except you recall in 2006, President Bush ordered the CIA black sites closed and the 9/11 accused and some other what they called high-value detainees brought in. They'd been held by the CIA, and now they're at Guantanamo in a secret camp called Camp 7, where they're segregated from everybody else. That's also a story that people don't really much know about Gitmo. What you see in the news is only a portion of the prison, you know, the detention center at Gitmo. They've got a number of places that are off limits and nobody has ever seen except people with classified security clearances.
So what is Camp 7?
It's a place where only people who were interrogated by the CIA are kept because what happened to them is considered presumptively classified. Their experiences, their lives, what the CIA did and where they held them is secret information, and so they can't come in contact with anyone else who didn't have the same life experience.
And there is no court that has determined that they should be kept there.
Oh, no. I mean, that's a management strategy by the, you know, the intelligence agencies to keep them separate. And, Emily, I think that I'm right to say that none of the Camp 7 detainees have ever had a habeas hearing come to completion, that they've never had their – that they got there in 2006, so their cases are further down the chute. But none of them have had been able to challenge their detention in a civilian court through a lawyer.
Yeah, that's true. None of those detainees have had their habeas cases come before judges yet. And while it seems that we keep trying to try them, or many of them at least, for acts of war, those efforts also have been slow in coming about.
Some of these guys, it's all men, right? There are no women.
They're all men.
Some of them were brought there when they were in their teens. I imagine there were those men are already in their early 20s.
Yes. The youngest man there is named Omar Khadr. He's a Canadian, and he's admitted to war crimes, and he's 24 years old. He'll be going back to Canada at age 25. He pleaded guilty in exchange for a short sentence. So he goes back later this year to Guantanamo.
And what would his war crime have been?
Omar Khadr admitted that in July 2002, during the American invasion of Afghanistan, that he threw a grenade and killed an American soldier. He was in an al-Qaeda safe house, and the American special forces attacked that safe house to take captives. And he says he indeed threw the grenade that killed an American soldier who was there.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with Carol Rosenberg, who's a reporter from McClatchy and the Miami Herald, and Emily Berman, who's a counsel in the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. We're talking about Guantanamo on today's Backstory segment. Stay with us. We're back with Emily Berman, counsel and the Brennan Society's Liberty and National Security Program, and Carol Rosenberg, who's a reporter from McClatchy and the Miami Herald. We're talking about Guantanamo on today's Backstory segment. Carol, haven't you sat in on some of the commissions?
Yes, we cover all those trials. There have been six people convicted at commissions.
What are they like?
They're more like a court-martial, I would say, than a trial that you'd see on Law and Order. There's most of the people in front of the bar are in uniform, and you have American military defense lawyers and American military prosecutors and American military jury, and this has been one of the great objections of the detainees who claim invariably abuse at the hands of the Americans, if not torture, and they're saying, how can I get a fair shot if everybody's wearing the uniform of my enemy? But they have witnesses, they have arguments, they have a variety of judges brought in from the military court-martial system. what's really, I guess, real remarkable about the Gitmo trials is that they're just so very far away.
But go ahead.
People are brought to the Pentagon and flown there on you know, under 24/7 custody and taken and put in tents to watch these proceedings. And the reporters who cover them are put in a one specific writing location where you're under scrutiny all the time. It's not like any kind of court reporting anybody would be familiar with on U.S. soil. You are in military custody from the moment you submit to going to these trials to the moment they let you go when they're over. It's very far away. They're not broadcast. There's no photography. And so my paper and a number in particular as an organization has committed to reporting it every day that there's a trial so that people can see at least in words what's going on down there.
So you have live tweeted some of them.
Oh yeah, that's the new thing. We tweet. I'm sitting in a filing center, watching the proceedings on closed circuit in front of a computer, and so that we can tell you when there's a conviction, and we can tell you when there's a sentence, and we can tell you when someone takes the stand. They were designed to be just like Guantanamo, kind of out of reach of mainstream America, and so I think the paper's done a pretty good job in trying to allow people who want to look into Guantanamo the opportunity to do this through news reports and tweeting. And
we have a link to that coverage on our show page at WNYC.org. Emily, in some cases, are defendants not allowed to see the evidence against them?
Yes, in short, yes.
Well, how do you defend yourself?
Well, their attorneys have to have the requisite security clearance in order to be able to see all of the evidence. So the defense attorneys have access to the evidence, but there are times when that evidence won't be shared with the defendant.
On the other hand, some people say that you actually may get a harsher sentence in a regular courtroom, and that was the argument when the attempt was made to try the alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in a Manhattan courtroom because of previous cases, but that's not happening. That plan fell apart.
Yeah, it certainly has been the case that the sentences handed down by the civilian criminal courts have been much harsher than the ones that the detainees have received when convicted by the military commissions. Not only that, but as Carol Rosenberg said, there have been 6 convictions in military court as compared to hundreds of convictions in criminal courts since 9/11. And yet the objections to bringing the 9/11 conspirators to New York were so vehement that it seems unlikely that that is where they'll be tried.
Well, partly that's because people were afraid that there might be a bombing, a suicide bomber or something else might happen. And they were afraid of a terrorist act. And we have to understand that in the wake of what happened on 9/11, don't we?
I suppose that we do. My view is that we live in New York, and if there's attempted terrorist attacks, they're likely to target us here, and that we shouldn't compromise our values, our criminal justice system, or our vision of justice based on fear.
And then there's the matter of Ahmed Galiani, was it, the Tanzanian who was accused of buying the supplies for the 1998 embassy bombings that killed over 200 people. He was acquitted of 284 out of 285 charges that were filed against him, and that's because civilian courts have certain rules that might not apply with a military tribunal.
Well, that was a case where one of the government's key witnesses was the judge ruled that he could not testify because the existence of this witness was discovered by coercive interrogation techniques. So that witness may or may not have been able to testify in a military commission. It's unclear. But I would also stress that one conviction out of the hundreds that he was acquitted of still carries with it the potential for a life sentence.
So Galani still may go to jail forever.
Yeah, and he's going to jail for at least 15 years.
Now, Carol, those who are charged with crimes will go before military commissions now, but some who are not charged with anything will also remain in Guantanamo under indefinite detention under an additional executive order the president signed this week. How does this indefinite detention system work, and what's the logic behind it?
Well, and in that, the Obama administration is very heavily borrowing from Bush administration doctrine, in which they say that these are war prisoners. They're not prisoners of war, but they're war prisoners, and that under this interpretation of the Geneva Conventions, there is a standard by which you can hold people for the duration of a conflict as war prisoners. And they've decided that there are a number of people who they could never charge and convict, who they consider to be too dangerous, and that they would like to continue to keep under this other status of Geneva Conventions, and they've created these review boards to try to look over their own shoulders and make sure that to try to satisfy themselves that they haven't caught up the wrong person in that dragnet. That whole issue is yet to be, I think, fully debated in society, if not in the courts, about the individuals, whether or not they could be held indefinitely. And that's where, among other things, habeas attaches. I'd like to go back to the whole issue of a New York trial or a civilian trial for the September 11th accused. Mm-hmm. The president hasn't eliminated that possibility. He did not on Monday say we're going to take those people back to military commissions. What he said is that they've so far been blocked in their ability to have a civilian trial, a non-military trial for the September 11th crimes, and that he's going to try to work with Congress to figure out a way to get a federal trial. And I know you said, Leonard, that people are concerned that those that if you were to bring the 9/11 accused to New York, they might be subject, you know, that there'd be a terror attack. But, you know, I only live in Miami, but I have faith in American law enforcement that if they want to secure a criminal federal mass murder trial in the United States, they can figure out a way to do it. I'm not saying they shouldn't be tried at Guantanamo, where they're far removed and the military can safeguard the base. But if somebody made a decision that they wanted to and chose to make a federal criminal trial in the United States, I think that American law enforcement could figure out a way to do it safely for the American public as well as for the five men who are accused.
Well, we've done it in the past. The indefinite detention order applies to 47 prisoners that are held in the camp. Is there any chance that this theory, which I'm not sure I understand completely, that we don't think we can convict them, so we're going to hold them indefinitely because we think they're dangerous anyway, whether that could be applied to more prisoners in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. By its own terms, the new executive order applies for those detainees that the administration considers detainable under the laws of war on this theory that you can hold an enemy until the end of active hostilities. And it also applies to detainees who have been referred for prosecution. So there are a number of detainees who are not part of that 47 that have been designated as likely indefinite detainees, but who the Obama administration is hoping to prosecute somewhere. But we don't know when or if those prosecutions will come to pass.
In an editorial on President Obama's decision to resume military tribunals and continue the indefinite detention system, the New York Times editorial board wrote that, I'm quoting, "To some degree, Barack Obama was forced into it by the Bush administration's legacy of torture and abuse, which made some important cases impossible to prosecute." That's why they don't think they can win those cases, even with a military tribunal?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the legacy in part of Guantanamo. It was established in order to be outside the rule of law entirely. And so when the detainees were picked up, when they were brought there, no care was given to whether to collecting evidence that might be used against them, to ensuring that their interrogations were consistent with principles of American criminal justice. So there's a number of barriers to prosecuting many of these men that come from the Bush administration's assumption that they would never have to answer for their treatment.
So they're in legal limbo.
But there's another important distinction, if I can interrupt for a little
bit. Please.
Not all
I love
these,
when you interrupt, Carol.
I apologize. not all of these men are not being tried because the evidence against them is tainted. You try someone at a military commission if you believe they committed a war crime, an act, you know, an act outside of the laws of war. Some of these men that would qualify as the 47 indefinite detainees are Taliban commanders or senior fighters and warriors for whom there are no allegations of war crimes. But what they're saying is, this is my enemy. He is a senior man in the Taliban, for example. I believe that some of them, they make the argument he is a senior man in Al-Qaeda. But he doesn't have any specific act for which we could try him. So not all of those 47 men are, you know, the people who were waterboarded who they've concluded they can't try. Because, in fact, in some instances, they are moving forward and are going to attempt to put on trial people who were waterboarded. And that's their intent.
The Department of Defense often refers to the prisoners held in Guantanamo as the worst of the worst. So do we just have to take their word for it in some cases because they're not being brought to trial?
Well, to a certain degree, that's what the habeas proceedings are trying to determine, and that is what these new review boards that the Obama administration announced are trying to determine. I mean, I think we've already seen that the worst of the worst may be there, but that's not all that was at Guantanamo. There's been about 800 men who.
Well, we had the Uyghurs who nobody wanted to take, but nobody could.
We still have them.
They're still here because nobody wants them.
Yeah, there's five of them who remain in Guantanamo. The administration has conceded that they never posed a threat to U.S. security. They can't go back to China for fear of torture and persecution there,
and
they remain at Guantanamo.
So where are these prisoners going to go if Guantanamo is ever closed, Carol?
Well, that is the conundrum that faces the Obama administration. They wanted to move them in order to close Guantanamo, but they didn't necessarily want to close Guantanamo as a concept, and that we know this week. They have decided that there are people who can be held in a Guantanamo-style detention, indefinite detention without charge, whether they're at Guantanamo or somewhere else. So it almost becomes a question of, is Guantanamo those prison camps that they want to close? Or did people expect that when he said he wanted to close Guantanamo, he wanted to change the policy to something that did not allow Guantanamo-style detention? And now we're 2 years later, and he has, the president and the administration has authorized indefinite detention without charge.
It's kind of institutionalization, but I'm wondering about the people who are brought to trial, and let's say they serve out their sentences, then where do they go?
Well, if they're still considered to be detainable under the laws of war, and if the administration still considers them to be a threat, they'll go right back into indefinite detention. So the end of a sentence may or may not be meaningful.
Carol, have any of the people we've had at Guantanamo died while they were in custody?
In fact, the most recent death was the 48th indefinite detainee, a gentleman who was designated by the Obama administration for detention in perpetuity. He died earlier this year after working out on an elliptical machine. He was one of those medium confinement guys. He had been working out and an elliptical machine collapsed and died of what apparently was a heart attack. We have had seven or so deaths of detainees there. And then back to the other question, two men have been convicted of war crimes and gone home. One is in Yemen. He was Osama bin Laden's driver. He's free, living as a Yemeni, since father to son. And we don't hear much about him. He's just apparently living his life.
Well, I've seen a film about him, and he still hates the United States and hopes that his son will become a jihadi. But I think
his brother-in-law.
But he's retired. We have run out of time, unfortunately, and there's so much more to talk about. I thought, we only have 40 minutes for this. Carol Rosenberg of McClatchy and the Miami Herald and Emily Berman of the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program. Thank you both so much for being with us today on today's Backstory Look at Guantanamo.
My pleasure.
Thank you.